ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Happy to be here again. Nice to look out and see a lot of familiar faces and quite a number of new faces. That means that things are always growing and improving. I want to thank Tulsi for taking the responsibility this semester of helping guide you all through this process of devotional service here at the Krishna House. And especially want to thank Kalakanta. This is actually, many of you may not know, but this isn't how ISKCON works everywhere. This is a visionary program that he's developed here, and all for the purpose of preaching and helping to spread Krishna consciousness on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. So I'm personally very grateful to him. It's with my particular work schedule, it's difficult at New Raman Reti to get on the class roster. They plan it out like a month in advance, and it's, you know, pretty strict. We affectionately referred to, anyway, at any rate, it's a little strict to get in there. So, but Kalakanta is very accommodating to me, so I'm very grateful. So we're speaking today from Srimad Bhagavatam, seventh chapter, about the activities of Bharat Maharaj. throughout the presentation this morning, there'll be questions and answers. And I have a pen and paper here, and answers will be duly noted and graded accordingly. So when a question goes up, please raise your hand if you've got the answer, and see what kind of due rewards, which is what the subject matter this morning is about, will be attributed at the end, and whether those rewards are sat or asat, which we'll also discuss. So, Bharat Maharaj, who in the room has no clue who Bharat Maharaj is? Raise your hand. Okay, so one or two of you. So basically everybody has some concept, has heard the story. This is one of the most common stories in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in our philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and that is the story of Bharat Maharaj and the three particular births that he took. Who, show of hands, who can name the three births for me? Yes, Prabhu? Yeah. What's your name? Okay. Yes. Yes. Judd Bart. Yes, very good. Okay. Alrighty. So, these three births are what we commonly know the story of Bharat Maharaj to entail. And it's discussed at great length because the implication of his activities that brought about the particular birth as a deer and the subsequent birth as Judd Bharat are very, very detailed. I had the great fortune one time. There was a home program when Indraduna Maharaj used to, still in the fond old days, used to come to Alachua for 5-6 days at a time. And we did a program at Gaudi's one night. I don't know how many of you know Gaudi Prabhu. He's got a nice home out in High Springs. And there was a living room probably about this size and half again that probably had 6,000 or 7,000 devotees in it. It was, and as the dancing went on, the sheer foundation of the house moved. It was very interesting. But at any rate, Maharaj at that time was doing a type of presentation where he would lecture for a bit on a subject and then just impromptu break into a theatrical presentation, if you will. He would assume the role of someone. Sri Prahlad would assume he'd thought, okay, you're going to be okay. You and you do such a – and then he would just right on the spot. So he did this pastime of Bharat Maharaj and the taking the birth as a deer and then – the subsequent birth is as Judd Bharat and the father's efforts to train him and all. We're all very familiar with the story like that. But I'd like to raise the point this morning. What are the qualities, aside from this understanding of the life of Bartmaj, that brought him into our scope of consciousness, that made him, if you will, one of the characters of Srimad Bhagavatam? My wife was pointing out to me, I forget where she referenced it now, and she'll say, yeah, that's about how much you listen to what I say. But she gave me the reference, I believe it had to do with Narada Muni, but that each of the individuals in the Srimad Bhagavatam are very specifically because of the instruction and pastime associated with that person. I mean, we know in Vedic literature, Mahabharata alone, there are unlimited personalities and characters and unlimited activities that are quite beneficial for us to know about. But why do we find Bharat Maharaj in the Srimad Bhagavatam? The Srimad Bhagavatam, each of the individuals are very carefully, their life is very carefully instructive to us as to how we can apply the information surrounding their pastime to our advancement and our progress in the path of devotional service. The stories that the acharyas give us, the instructions there, they're not just, you know, entertaining, and they are extremely entertaining. I mean, you know, just the details of the different characters in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, this is, you know, the common joke is if you're having insomnia, read the Bhagavatam. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is that very, very exciting information there. So with that, I'd like to read the first five verses here, just the translations, and kind of set the stage here for the, oh boy, these things move real fast or real slow. I'm still mastering the use of Kindle as a aid in the presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam. So I got it right here. Well, no, let's say I'm just going to go through the translations here. So, chapter 7, first text. Sukadeva Goswami continued, speaking to Maharaj Prakrit. My dear king, Bart Maharaj was a topmost devotee, following the orders of his father, who had already decided to install him on the throne. He began to rule the earth accordingly. When Bharat Maharaj ruled the entire globe, he followed the orders of his father and married Panchajani, the daughter of Vishvarupa. Just as the false ego, text 2, just as the false ego creates the subtle sense objects, Bharat Maharaj created five sons in the womb of Panchajani, his wife. These sons were named Sumati, Rastrabrita, Sudarshan, Avarana, and Dumraketu. Text 3. Formerly, this planet was known as Anjanabhavarsha, but since Maharaj Bharata's reign, it has now become known as Bharatvarsha. Text 4. Bharat Maharaj was a very learned and experienced king on this earth. He perfectly ruled the citizens, being himself engaged in his own respective duties. Maharaj Bharat was as affectionate to the citizens as his father and grandfather had been. Keeping them engaged in their occupational duties, he ruled the world. Text 5. With great faith, King Bharat performed various kinds of sacrifice. He performed the sacrifices known as Agnihotra, Darsha, Purnamasya, Chaturmasya, Pasu Yagna, wherein a horse is sacrificed, and Soma Yagna, wherein a kind of beverage is offered. Sometimes these sacrifices were performed completely and sometimes partially. In any case, in all of the sacrifices, the regulations of Chaturhotra were strictly followed. In this way, Bharat Maharaj worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just a side note on this particular verse here, mentioning the different types of yagas that he performed. Agnihotra is mentioned first. Typically, in this particular time period, and according to the guidelines of this, an Agnihotra is performed daily. There are actually some of the Brahmins in our own community here who every day perform an Agnihotra in their home. Then there's the Darsha. Darsha Hotra, this is performed every fortnight. Every 2 weeks you perform this. And the Purnamasya, Purnamasya. Purnamasya, as you can imagine, to do with the moon. This is every full moon one performs it. Then the Chaturmasya, of course, we know the vows of Chaturmasya were in the middle of the Chaturmasya season. Interestingly enough, this is the Vedic leap year. And in the Vedic leap year, we have the month of Purushottama Adhika Mash. Who's familiar with the Purushottama Adhika Mash month? Yeah? Who can tell me the benefit of this month? Nobody. Whatever devotional service you perform during the Purushottama Adhika Mash, 1,000 times the result comes. So any devotional service, any austerities performed during this time, you get 1,000 times the benefit. The interesting thing also is it comes at different times of the year, but when it falls in the Chaturmasya season, as it is this year, one stops following any Chaturmasya vows that one may have followed, not shaving or eating off the floor or whatever the vow is one has, doesn't follow during that month and then takes up other vows like that. So the Chaturmasya Vrata, then the Pasu Yagna, which is the offering of a horse. Prabhupada mentions in the purport here that other animals like hogs and cows were offered. Now, we may be a little set back by this. How is it that they're performing some sacrifice and offering animals? I mean, we're vegetarian by diet, but by ethical principle for not causing any harm to animal species. And the important thing to understand in this particular type of yoga is that the qualified priest at the offering of this animal into the fire, that final oblation is when that animal is offered, the animal would then come back out of the fire in a new, younger form. So this was the qualifying factor of the ability to perform this yoga. That's why Prabhupada mentions there are five things in this Kali Yuga that are not allowed, and this is one of them. Who can name the other four items? By hand? Sannyas, okay. Another? Yes, Prabhu? Okay, all right. Anyone else? Or sacrifices another. What's your name, Prabhu? Okay. And? Cow sacrifice. So we'll go with that. I can't remember the fifth one either. So at any rate, these... They are separated. Okay, so then that's the five. So these activities are not, because there are no qualified brahmanas. One of the most important mantras, series of mantras that I know, the Puruhits that I'm associated with chant, is the mantras at the end for forgiveness of offenses. If I chanted anything incorrectly or did a procedure wrong, you never do a jugga without those mantras, because chances are very good that you chanted something incorrectly or did something wrong. So, and we'll get into the idea behind that there. So, and then, of course, the Soma Yagna, wherein the Soma beverage is offered to the fire itself, because the fire is understood to be the personality of Vishnu. So in this way, these are the different types of ceremonies he performed. But it's important to note that in all cases, Bharat Maharaj worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada goes a bit more into this in the sixth verse here, which is the verse I'd like to concentrate on today. After performing the preliminaries of various sacrifices, Maharaj Bharat offered the results in the name of religion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. In other words, he performed all the yagnas for the satisfaction of Lord Vasudeva, Krishna. Maharaj Bharat thought that since the demigods were different parts of the Lord's body, he controls those who are explained in the Vedic mantras. By thinking in this way, Maharaj Bharat was freed from all material contaminations, such as attachment, lust, and greed. How does the Bhagavad Gita describe these? Who can answer that for me? These attachment, lust, and greed? Gopal. Three gates to hell, yes. Thank you. That's correct. So, when the priests were about to offer the sacrificial ingredients into the fire, Maharaj Bharat expertly understood how the offering made to different demigods was simply an offering to the different limbs of the Lord. For instance, Indra is the arm of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Surya is his eye, so on. Thus, Maharaj Bharat considered that the oblations offered to the different demigods were actually offered unto the different limbs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vasudeva. So, the mentality, the consciousness of Bharat Maharaj is what we focus on in this verse. We understand that many times two people may be doing the same activity, but the consciousness at which it is done is what's going to distinguish the result and the impact that it has on that individual's progress in their goal in life. So the purport here, it's a lengthy one, and I'm going to bring it up and comment on it as we go through it. The Supreme Personality of Godhead says that as long as one does not develop the pure devotional service of Shravanam, Kirtanam, hearing and chanting, one must carry out his prescribed duties. Since Bharat Maharaj was a great devotee, one may ask why he performed prescribed sacrifices that are actually meant for karmis. The fact is that he was simply following the orders of Vasudeva. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharma Paricchaya Mam Ekam Saranam Braja. Who can tell me what chapter that's from? 18th chapter. All right. Okay. Whatever we do, we should constantly remember Vasudeva. So this is a very important point. The activities, as it mentions, Prabhupada says that Bharat Maharaj is a great devotee, so why was he performing the activities of a karmi externally like this? How many of you are going to university? So why are you going to university? What's the point? You're attending classes here. You're living in the Krishna house. You're engaged in devotional activities. Why bother to go to the university? Because this will be used to serve your particular direction in life as it pertains to devotional service. Not going to the university simply to acquire some particular piece of paper or some documentation in a particular field and then go about using that to make massive amounts of money and live comfortably. But that whatever that is, your consciousness, while executing your prescribed duty, is of being Krishna conscious. And this is important because the process of hearing and chanting is what gives us the ability to purify our consciousness and the activity that we're performing. As Prabhupada says here, as long as one does not develop the pure devotional service beginning with Shravanam Kirtanam, one must carry out prescribed duties. So these prescribed duties are there. If one is a student, one has to engage in some type of academic pursuit. Then one enters into the household ashram and has a responsibility for taking care of the family and taking care of the children, taking care of the wife, taking care of the community. This is the interesting thing about the householder ashram. Oh, it's just too difficult to be a brahmacharya. I'm just going to get married. You know, that. Well, of course, that's not so much the case nowadays, but back in my day, that was it. But actually, the householders are responsible for 3/4 of the society. Who supports the brahmacharis? The householders. Who supports the vanaprastras? The householders. Who supports the sannyasis? The householders. So, and we got a lot to do.
Who supports the grihasthas?
Right. So, as a responsible householder, there are certain prescribed duties. So, if those duties are executed in a mood of pure devotional service, the result, the goal, and the means of attaining that being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then one becomes fully satisfied by that activity. Now, Prabhupada asks an interesting question here. Since Bharat Maharaj was a great devotee, and there's no doubt that he's a great devotee because he's in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and his activities are discussed by the likes of Sukadeva Goswami, Pariksit Maharaj, Sutta Goswami. They're not talking about just anybody just to pass the time. You know, it's not like going on Facebook and just ramble on and, you know, talk about anything. They specifically mentioned, so he's a great devotee. One may ask, why he performed these activities, which are actually meant for the karmis. Now, this is an interesting point. We use this word quite freely in Krishna consciousness, or the karmis. Actually, to be a karmi is a pretty advanced thing, because karmis are very, very specific. Karmi means one who's engaged in karma kanda activities, that by engaging a particular sacrifice at a particular time under this direction, this result will come, and then that result will be divided in such a way that the benefit will become there, and then from there I can, you know, everything's charted out. It's not whimsical. Those that we refer to as karmis, if you want it to be condescending in a name, it would be mlechas, yavanas. They have no principles. A karmi, by contrast, is very exacting about what they do, very conscious about their activity, because they know the result is coming and it will bring them a certain type of resultant activity, whatever sacrifice they perform, whatever charity they give. It is very, very calculated like this. So these activities that we see the king do are falling under that category, because a king has all these responsibilities. So the question might be, why would he do this? Prabhupada answers that right here. Because he's simply following the orders of the Lord. Sarva dharma parichaya mame kam saranam braja. Whatever activities you perform, do them as an offering unto me. Just abandon all other religious processes and surrender unto me. So externally, as the king, for the benefit of the kingdom, for the resultant activities of the smooth functioning of the kingdom, he performs these activities, as well as setting the example of being a Raja Rishi, setting the example of engaging in Shravanam Kirtanam. This process is, as I mentioned, it's really about the consciousness, the mentality that one executes this in. Because the mentality that one has, thinking, feeling, and willing, the mentality will have a direct impact on who we are and how we're perceived as an individual in our execution through life. In this same paragraph here, Prabhupada continues that people are generally addicted to offering obeisances to the various demigods, but Bharat Maharaj simply wanted to please Lord Vasudeva. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktiram Yagnitapesham Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Sudridam Sarvabhutanam Gyantvamam Santam Richati. One of the most popularly quoted verses by Srila Prabhupada. You can tell me what chapter it's from in the Gita? Okay. So in that verse, Prabhupada points out that the personality of Godhead is the friend of everyone. So simply to please him, this is why. Now, Prabhupada continues that yajna may be carried out to satisfy a particular demigod. But when the yajna is offered to the yajna purusha, Narayana, the demigods are automatically satisfied. The purpose of performing different yajnas is to satisfy the Supreme Lord. One may perform them in the name of different demigods or directly. In the execution of different types of pujas and agnihotras and things, there are different personalities that are invited, installed at the yajna kund, at the fire pit. And there are different demigods in the karmakanda process. But when one has the Vaishnava bhakti view of these, one instead sees them as representatives in their service to Krishna. And this is where those who are engaged in karmic activities, karmakanda, fall short. They see the, as I mentioned, being better than mlechas and yavanas, who are simply driven by the unlimited and unfulfilling desire for sense gratification. Prabhupada gives a classic example of the fire. The more wood you put in a fire, it doesn't put the fire out. Even if at the beginning it smothers it, once it gets its breath, it's... So this is those that are engaged in, you know, pursuit of sense gratification. The karmis are very specific in understanding it. This isn't about just me. There's demigods, great personalities that control, you know, the reaction of this, that control the presence of the sun, that control my level of wealth, and, you know, so on and so on and so on. Srimad Bhagavatam. Who can tell me what portion of the Srimad Bhagavatam describes the results one gets from worshiping the different demigods? No. Second canto, very good, Gopal. You get 2 marks. Second canto, you worship Uma, you get a good husband. You worship Shiva, you get a good wife. There's a whole list in there in the Bhagavatam. And then ultimately, this is the end, but you worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all good fortune comes. So the karmic, karmakanda pursuers, those worshiping, as Prabhupada says here, the activities of the karmis, they understand the demigods are there. So they're very particular about acknowledging them. But one may perform them in the name of the demigods directly. And different demigods are directly in the name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the qualifying factor of bhakti, is that one understands that these personalities are subservient. It's one of the classic arguments when you talk to followers of Lord Shiva, to the Shaivites. You know, Lord Shiva's supreme. Well, actually, Lord Shiva's a servant of Krishna. You know, no, Lord Brahma's supreme. Actually, Lord Brahma's got that curse. He's only got one temple in all of India. You know, Lord Shiva, you go anywhere, there's temples of Lord Shiva. Lord Brahma's got that curse. He gets one temple. Oh, you get one spot. We'll give you that, you know. But those personalities that are their followers, right, these are the supreme personalities. Ganesh is certainly the supreme lord. Ganesh is the all-knowing, all-powerful, removes obstacles, so on and so like that. So these personalities, they make that first step in acknowledging that there are greater influences and personalities in the universe than myself, and it actually gives credence to the principle of personalism, that the wind is not just some force blowing, but Vayu is making the wind to blow. That the sun just doesn't come out because, okay, well, it's a time of, the, you know, because Indra is bringing it. I'm sorry, not Indra, Surya. So they're acknowledging the personal aspect, but they stop there. This is the principle of the Vaishnava understanding, is that these individuals are all servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one can see that, Prabhupada mentions here, let me just listen. Next paragraph. So let me continue here just a second. Prabhupada uses the classic examples he's famous for. If we directly offer oblations to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the demigods are automatically satisfied. If we water the root of a tree, the branches, twigs, fruits, and flowers are automatically satisfied. When one offers sacrifice to different demigods, one should remember the demigods are simply parts of the body of the Supreme. If we worship the hand of a person, we are intending to satisfy the person himself. If we massage a person's leg, we do not really serve the legs, but the person who possesses the legs. Anybody a massage therapist in the group here? So if we just give you a leg, and I could be so enticed to just, okay, let me just massage this leg. We massage the leg because it's attached to the person. So in the same way, our service to the demigods is there because they are attached to Lord Vishnu. Demigod worship is mentioned in the Brahma Samhita, but actually the slokas advocate the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda. For instance, worship of the goddess Durga is mentioned in this way in Brahma Samhita. Stiti, stiti, pralaya sadhana shakti eka, chayeva yasya bhavanani vibharti Durga, ichapna rupa api yasya chachetas, Cha-che-ta-te-sa Govinda-mari-pushim-tamaham-bhajami. Following the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the goddess Durga creates, maintains, and annihilates. So this is the point, that the worship of the demigods, and all these different personalities are mentioned in Brahma Samhita. I can't give all the different verses, but Durga is mentioned, Indra is mentioned, Ganesh is mentioned, Lord Shiva is mentioned, and all of them are mentioned in regards to their service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The final line in each of those verses, Govinda Mari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So in this way, the personalities of these demigods are acknowledged for their particular service as it is connected to that personality to whom they are serving. And the demigods themselves, this is what the followers of the demigods never acknowledge, is that they themselves acknowledge that we're not the supreme. And anytime they falsely think like that, it becomes a lila with the Lord. Govardhan Leela. Ender began to think, okay, hey, you know, the cowherd boy's there. What about me? You know, so then he sends the Sambhartaka clouds and he starts this whole thing. And he realizes, oh boy, I made a big mistake. Lord Brahma is like, oh, this little cowherd boy? They thought, all right, I'm stealing all the cows and calves. And I made a big mistake, you know. Lord Shiva, the pastime with Mohini Murti, thinking he was unaffected by these things. And so these different personalities, when they do forget their mood of subservience to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord uses that to teach a lesson. This is because they're great devotees. Now, I'm quite sure that many of you, like myself, have had a circumstance where you've had to learn a lesson. The difference in our circumstances, it doesn't get written up in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Nobody's writing a chapter about, you know, anything that we do. And I can guarantee you that in future generations, they won't be either. But these personalities, they are exalted by nature of their service and by the fact that they are considering themselves to be part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna confirms this service in the Bhagavad Gita, Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyute Sacharacharan. The material nature is working in my direction, O son of Kunti, and it is producing all moving and unmoving beings. Chapter 9. Okay. So, when we worship the demigods in that spirit, because the goddess Durga satisfies Krishna, we should therefore offer respects to goddess Durga. Because Lord Shiva is nothing but Krishna's functional body, we should therefore offer respects to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva has an amazing position in that at the creation of the universe, he is the active agent by which the living entities are impregnated into the pradhan. The Mahatattva is just as, you know, for lack of any other better word, you can call it the primordial soup from their particular version. And the living entity enters into those material elements, which are complete in and of themselves, minus the presence of the jiva. And that's done through the agency of Lord Shiva. This is not done directly by Krishna himself. He doesn't get messed in with this stuff, handling and contacting the material energy. This is done through Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is therefore honored and respected greatly for that. But even more so, as Vaishnavas, we worship Lord Shiva because he is the personality that can grant Braj Bhakti. In the holy dhams, particularly in Vrindavan, there are the different locations of Lord Shiva's personality. My favorite is Chakaleshwar Mahadev, the protector of Govardhan Hill. He resides at Govardhan Hill and allows one entrance into that mood of Govardhan Leela. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati were establishing the presence of Sri Mayapur Dham after so many generations of things being lost and unclear, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he established the different presences of Lord Shiva in his forms as the protector of the Dham, Kshetrapala, one who protects the Dham. So Lord Shiva has specifically, and Lord Shiva, of course, himself, is in his own category. The jivas, there's so many jivas. We have 76% of the qualities of Krishna, can have. Some of us have 0% of the qualities of Krishna. But we can have up to 76% of the qualities of Krishna. Lord Shiva, very special. 86% of those qualities can be present in his personality. Only he is in that category. So his ability to give us that entrance into the mood of devotional service is because of his unalloyed service. Why is it that we feel the impetus and the satisfaction of surrendering to a spiritual master? Because that spiritual master has that connection with Krishna and manifests that through his activities, through his consciousness, through his words, through his physical actions. Therefore, one could understand this personality is connected with the Lord. And to surrender to such a personality, I will get that same benediction, that same blessing, that same direction in my life. So similarly with Lord Shiva, we find that because of his direct connection and his mood of service to the personality of Godhead, he is worshipped in this way. So this is how one should offer respects to the demigods. because of their connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Similarly, we should offer respects to Brahma, Agni, and Surya. There are many offerings to different demigods, and one should always remember that these offerings are usually meant to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bharat Maharaj did not aspire to receive benedictions from the demigods. This is the difference in this beginning of this purport where Prabhupada says, why is he engaged in things that appear to be like a normal karmi? The karmis are specifically worshiping the demigods to get this result. This was not Bharat Maharaj's mentality. Here again, we go back to the consciousness. To the consciousness that Bharat Maharaj was thinking, these personalities are all connected to the Supreme Lord. They're all part and parcel of him. They have their service to him. Therefore, by acknowledging them, their devotees, I will get their blessings. Every day we pray for the mercy and the blessings of the Vaishnavas. This doesn't only mean these Vaishnavas, it means these Vaishnavas. It means that we're praying for the devotees to give us their blessings. So in the same way, Bharat Maharaj is not worshiping the demigods to get their benedictions. Why not? Prabhupada says, why not here? His aim was to please the Supreme Lord. In the Mahabharata, among the thousand names of Vishnu, Vishnu Sahasranam, it is said, Yajna Bhuj Yandakrit Yajna. The enjoyer of Yajna, the performer of Yajna, and Yajna itself are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But out of ignorance, the living entity... The Supreme Lord is the performer of everything. But out of ignorance, the living entity thinks that he is the actor. As long as we think we are the actors, we bring about karma bandha. Karma bandha means that this is the bondage which is going to tie us to this material world. If we act for yajna, for Krishna, then there is no karma bandha. Yajna tat karmano bandha anatra loka yam karma bandhana. Bhagavad Gita chapter... Somebody else. Ladies. All right, you're up. Chapter? Wrong. No? Nobody? Chapter 3, the entire third chapter. It was the first chapter I memorized as a brahmachari. I was actually 1975. I was on the crew in Chicago. I was St. Louis devotee, and we visited Chicago where Prabhupada was. And I was on the crew that got to clean Prabhupada's quarters every morning because he was living in a grihastha's apartment about 6 blocks from the temple. So I'd walk from the temple after Mangal Arati over to his quarters and then walk back. And, of course, in those days, I had all my rounds done before Mangal Arati. And so those days are long gone. So at any rate, on that walk, I had all the third chapter. Who does this anymore? Who has index cards with verses written on them? Anybody? Is that still a practice? I mean, in my day, you weren't a good brahmacharya unless you had a stack of index cards with the verses on them. My stack, I found it the other day. It's about this thick. So at any rate, the third chapter of the Gita deals with yajna and sacrifice and being free from karmic activity and all. So I used to recite that back and forth to Prabhupada's apartment to clean and then back like this. Third chapter, yes. Following the instructions of Bharat Maharaj, we should act not for our personal satisfaction, but for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As is stated, Ashradhaya hutam dattam, tapas taptam kutam chayat, ashad it yuchite partha, na cha tat preti no iha. Sacrifices, austerities, and charities performed without faith for the Supreme Personality of Godhead are non-permanent. Non-permanent. What is the nature of our soul? What are the three qualities of the soul? Okay. First one, eternity. Sat. Eternal. The activities that one who performs sacrifice, austerities, and charities without faith, those results are non-permanent. They are asat. Regardless of whatever rituals are performed, these asat activities are non-permanent. They are therefore useless, both in this life and the next. Strong words, useless. It's actually a pretty insult. I work with a guy that sometimes the department managers will be, God, you're useless. Now, if you are described in those words, it's really insulting. I mean, it really is. Think about it. You are useless. My father would sometimes say that. Well, my father was from the South, and he had a whole collection of Southern soliloquies, you know. Looks like it's going to rain like a cow peeing on a flat rock, you know, or his favorite when I was growing up. You know, son, you might think I rolled it off the turnip truck yesterday, but I drove it to town. You know, this is why I'm like I am. I grew up with this stuff. But one thing was useless as nipples on a goat's neck. Useless as nipples on a goat's neck. So that's really an insulting statement. You know, so Prabhupada says here that these activities, they're useless. Useless activities. Where did we go here? There we go, yeah. Not only useless immediately in this life, but useless in the next life as well. So, therefore, we want to engage in those activities which are sat, which are eternal, which relate to our eternal nature. And this is the principle of what Bharat Maharaj was doing. The externally apparent karmic activities, because his consciousness was different, right? He was engaging the priest in doing chaturhotra. That means the four priests. And every yoga you perform, there's traditionally four priests. One that is the Brahma. He checks to make sure everything is in proper place. One that offers the oblations into the fire. One that feeds the fire. And one that recites the mantras. So these four priests are there, and they coordinate everything like that. So he engaged these four priests and did all these different yajnik performances. And externally did them all very perfect. But internally he was thinking of how this was all connected to and going to bring the result of Krishna consciousness. So you may be going to university. You may be working at Lowe's. You may be driving a taxi, whatever it is you're doing, but the consciousness that you do that with, following the example of a great Raja Rishi like Bharat Maharaj, is going to determine the result. Kings like Maharaj Ambarish and many other Raja Rishis who were pure devotees of the Lord, that's why they're in the Bhagavatam, pure devotees of the Lord, simply passed their time in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When a pure devotee executes some service to the agency of another person, he should not be criticized, for his activities are meant for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. Important management principle. Those of you who are in or who will be in or look to someday be in some field of management, important principle. Your service through others will not be criticized if it is meant for the satisfaction of another goal materially or the Supreme Personality of Godhead spiritually. We've seen in past history of ISKCON, we see now sometimes even, that if one engages in a particular activity where the service of that activity is for me, the result of that activity is for me, and the purpose of that activity is all about me, well, then that gradually will lead to a fall down because we are not permanent. We are asat, this me. If it's for the spiritual service of the Personality of Godhead, then we actually have some connection to the supreme, eternal, spiritual nature. This is the important thing of being in a managed position, of taking responsibility for disciples, of instructing people in the process of devotional service, that we should not ever fall under the illusion that this is all about me. And here again, this is the perfect quality that Bharat Maharaj did not have. Prabhupada mentions earlier in the purport how he engaged, a couple of verses ahead, how he engaged all the subjects in their occupational duties and was as kind to them as was his father and his grandfather. This means he was lacking the mentality of exploitation. This is why so many devotees have such a hard time getting into the political times of the day. Because we see that all the politicians, their mood is exploitation. Whether they're conservative or liberal or radical or libertarian or whatever, you know, it's all about exploiting the citizenry, the resources for their own satisfaction. These Raja Rishis made up of the two words, Raja, king, and Rishi, saintly person. They did not exploit for their personal benefit. They set a different type of example. We therefore wait for the results of our activities, pious or impious, because they do not ensue immediately. This is called apurva. Side question. Who can tell me the son of our apurva and is very well known for kirtan? Now, you don't count. Many? Amaprana. Yes. I used to travel with apurva when Amaprana was like that. When we act piously or impiously, immediate results do not ensue. These results are called apurva, results that manifest in the future. Even the smartest accept this apurva. Pure devotees simply act for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the results of their activities are spiritual and permanent. Here again, consciousness. As devotees of the Lord, our activities become eternal, become permanent, when we act for the pleasure of the Personality of Godhead. If that activity is tinged by personal motivation, by personal aggrandizement, by personal desire for results, then it is not a permanent result. These activities are not like the karmi's activities, which are non-permanent. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Gata sangasya muktasya gyanavarshi tachetasa yagna charata yagnaya charata karma samagram praviliyate. The work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature and who is fully situated in transcendental knowledge merge entirely into transcendence. Double points. Who can tell me what chapter that's from in the Gita? Nah. Fortunately, you don't lose double points. Okay, because that's what you got, doubles. All right. That's from the fourth chapter. Fourth chapter. It's one of those relatively unremembered verses from the fourth chapter of the Gita. A devotee concluding statement here. This is very, very important here. A devotee is always free from material contamination. He is fully situated in knowledge, and therefore his sacrifices are intended for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How many of you have taken up some vow for Purushottama month? How many of you take up some vow during the Chaturmasya period? How many of you follow a codicil? So these are vratas. These are austerities. The reason we do these austerities is not simply to get some blessing of some particular demigod, but we do these austerities because they're satisfying to the Personality of Godhead. The month of Purushottama is said to be the most satisfying month to the Lord. Kartik, the climax of Chaturmasya, is described as the Personality of Kartik as Kartika Devi. This is another name for Srimati Radharani. This is her favorite month of the year, Kartik time. The Ekadasi, the Personality of Ekadasi, is Srihari himself. So in this way, the different austerities that we perform, the different sacrifices we engage in, these are done as a part of our devotional service for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in that way, we actually get eternal benefits. So this concluding statement here, this concluding sentence really brings it all together here. This mentality is why Bharat Maharaj is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, why we read about him, and why it is exemplary of us to know not only the common knowledge that he was a king and then he became a deer and then he became Judd Bharat, but to understand the underlying consciousness that got him to that point of being able to make that transition through those three different births and ultimately return back to home, back to Godhead, and why his qualities are worth our taking note of and imbibing in our own daily life. So we'll finish there. If anyone has any comments or questions, we'll do our best. Yes, Prabhu.